is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 20th, 2019. I'm Buster Olney. I'm back in Bristol with Troy Farkas. And Troy, I want to take everybody behind the curtain for how this podcast is produced every day. You get up early, and I appreciate that, and you put together a potential rundown for our scoreboard part of the show, the top of the show, and some of the news, and you put together some of the elements. But I've noticed a trend with you that it seems like at least 3 or 4 days out of every week, your recommendation for the game of the day seems to involve your Texas Rangers. And I just want to let you know, okay, if you check the American League standings, and especially the West, your Rangers are not in contention. And so when you had that game as the recommended game of the day today, I'm looking around. We had a near no-hitter with the St. Louis Cardinals. We got the Minnesota Twins in a pennant race. We got the Astros in a pennant race. And you're throwing at me Texas Rangers as the game of the day.
Listen,
please defend yourself.
Listen, the phrase is game of the day. When you say game of the day, that doesn't take into effect the standings. My criteria for game of the day is just what was the best game of baseball played that day.
Uh-huh.
The Rangers win 8-7 in 11 innings.
Right.
They come back like from 5 or 6 runs down. That's a heck of a good game. Better than a 3-0 whatever our game of the day will be.
Right. And you just summed it up in one sentence, which I think pretty much covers us for the Rangers at this point, as opposed to running highlights from their game. But anyway, we digress, and we'll move on to get to, let's see where we actually put the Rangers today in the lineup as opposed to the game of the day, because I can guarantee you this, they're not the game of the day today. All right, some of the news today. Indians pitcher Carlos Carrasco pitched for the first time since his leukemia diagnosis. He threw an inning of relief for AA Akron against Harrisburg on Monday. It's a good first sign for the 32-year-old. Here's Carlos Carrasco talking about what it felt like to pitch again.
It was really special today. You know, spend 2.5 months away from baseball and just coming back today out of the bullpen, and it feels great. Because, you know, first time coming back, you know, from 2.5 months without baseball and just only maybe a couple bullpen, maybe 3 or 4 bullpens in the first pitch, just 97. Right away, I look back to the scoreboard because I just want to find out what was that pitch, and it's 97. That feels great. When I saw in the bullpen, I was nervous. All the guys over there started laughing. Hey, are you okay? So I started like shaking a little bit. But it's what it is. So I feel like excited, you know, it's coming back. But as soon as I throw the first pitch, everything's gone.
Yeah, Carlos Carrasco pitched for the Akron Rubber Ducks last night. That's a good first step for him. Corey Kluber, on the other hand, had a setback. He's got an abdominal issue, and he's been backed up 2 weeks. So now he's starting to fight the calendar. And with the question of whether or not he's going to be available to start in the postseason. Chris Sale, dealing with an elbow issue, met with Dr. James Andrews Monday, and he won't pitch again this season. And following a PRP injection, Sale will be reevaluated again by Andrews in 6 weeks. So no Tommy John surgery for now. The Red Sox announced that Andrews confirmed their diagnosis of inflammation, but we'll explain in a bit in a conversation that we're going to have with Dan Shaughnessy, the Boston Globe, why it appears there's so much the Red Sox haven't revealed. The Braves claimed outfielder Billy Hamilton on waivers, a really interesting addition this late in the season. Of course, he's someone who gives them some center field options. With Ender Inciarte out, you can start a game with Ronald Acuna Jr. in center field. And then later, as Hamilton enters as a pinch runner defensive replacement, he'll play center field, and they'll probably slide Acuna Jr. over to left field. The Rangers played the Angels. It went into extra innings, and then the Rangers walked it off.
Swinging a chopper off the plate, high behind the mound. Fielded by Ramirez. He throws the first wide of the bag. Coming in to score is Trevino, and the Rangers will walk it off. A Baltimore chop. Infield hit for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Plates the game-winning run here tonight. Scored by Jose Trevino.
So in a related question, if a tree falls in a forest and there's no one around, does it make a sound, Troy?
Why is that relevant?
Because that's what the Rangers game are right. You know, all of their results are right now, right? Like they don't matter in the standings. And
no,
you had
it
them lined
doesn't.
Up as the game of the day.
It doesn't, but it was the best game of baseball played. I mean, Ohtani had a great day. The Rangers come back to win. I don't know what your criteria are. You didn't lay this out for me.
Okay. Well, I'll just correct you every day. Whenever you have the Rangers listed as the game of the day, oh, my God. Nationals, Pirates, before this game, Nationals ace Max Scherzer indicated to reporters he expects to return from the injured list on Thursday if he doesn't have a setback. He declared himself ready to pitch. As this game started, the Nationals blew out the Pirates.
Now the pitch. Swing by Turner and a belt to deep left field. Reynolds going back. Warning track. Wall looking up. It is gone. Goodbye. Bang. Zoom goes Trey Turner with a 3-run home run. His 13th of the year. It'll give him 41 RBIs. It's the Nationals 7 and the Pirates nothing.
Charlie Slows on the Nationals radio network. Washington's offense is on a roll. They win this game 13-0. They're two games ahead for the top wild card spot. And for the Pirates, another ugly loss. The White Sox edge the Twins 6-3 with help from Jose Abreu.
Here's a swing and a long one to left. Tagged, bagged, a home run for Abreu. And the White Sox now lead. And they lead 4-2.
Ed Farmer on WGN. At the end of the day, the Indians two games behind the Twins in the American League Central. The Astros and the Tigers, and during the course of this game, Astros shortstop Carlos Correa had to leave after just one inning because of back discomfort. A.J. Hinch told reporters after the game, he said he kind of never got loose, never felt comfortable. That is certainly a concern to watch as we move forward because Carlos Correa has had back issues in the past. It really hampered him in 2018. In the bottom of the first inning, the Astros took the lead.
Here's the 0-2. And that is hit in the center pretty well. It sends back Reyes, and it's over his head and hits off the wall. Bregman scores. Also scoring Alvarez. A two-run double for Gurriel. And the Astros lead 3-1.
Robert Ford, KBME, 790 AM. Houston takes care of business against the Tigers, winning 5-4. The end of the day, they're three games behind the Yankees in the race for the best record in the American League. The Mariners blew out the Rays 9-3. Austin Nola getting a big hit.
And the left-hander's 1-1 pitch. Swing and a high fly ball deep to left field. Pham going back to the track, to the wall. Goodbye, baseball. Austin Nola with a home run. His 7th home run of the year. This is a 2-run home run in the top half of the second. And it's now the Mariners 7 and the Rays 1.
Rick Riz, 710, ESPN Seattle. The Rays' chances at the end of the day for making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs, 71%. Right now they're the second wild card team. They have a one-game lead, two more wins over Oakland, and they lead the Red Sox by 6 games.
Can't believe I'm about to do this.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
Yeah, the real game of the day was in St. Louis. The Cardinals and the Brewers locked into a battle to try to win the National League Central. The Cardinals starting today at the top of the National League Central. Paul DeJong got a big hit in the bottom of the 6th.
Swing and a home run. Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah. It goes into Big Mac land. And the Cardinals lead it 3-0. That is number 22 for Paul DeJong.
Mike Shannon with his to-the-point home run call on the Cardinals radio network. Now, Dakota Hudson, yeah, he had a no-hitter going in this game. Carried it into the 7th inning, and this is what happened.
Pitch number 111, and he walked him. The 4th walk issued by Hudson, a 2-out walk. And Mike Shield going to the home plate umpire, and this will be a double switch. Here's some of the grumbling and moans and groans from the faithful, but you're also going to get a huge, loud ovation coming up for Dakota Hudson.
Yeah, it was the right call. Dan McLaughlin, Ricky Horton on the Cardinals television network. You got a pennant race game. You had a guy taken out of the game with a only 7 outs away from a no-hitter. So that's what the game of the day looks like. The Brewers broke up the no-hitter in the top of the 8th inning.
Rondon holds the bat high over the left shoulder. Gallegos from the stretch. The pitch. A swing, and there's a hit down the right field line. That ball hits down fair and bounces into the stands. It's a ground rule double. Arcia will stop at third base, and there's the first hit for the Brewers.
That from John Rooney on the Cardinals radio network. The final score was St. Louis 3, the Brewers nothing. At the end of the day, the Cardinals a one-half game lead over the Cubs in the National League Central. Troy, now that you've got all the information in hand and you look at the big picture, would you agree with me that Cardinals-Brewers was the game of the day?
No. I mean, I knew all of these things
going into it.
I knew all of these things going into it. I knew Hudson had a great game. I know the implications of this game, but still, Rangers, better game, and they won.
Unbelievable. I'm thinking about suspending you from the power rankings on Wednesday, you know, the Power 10, because I don't want the Rangers to slip in at number 10 when they're out of contention. They certainly were not the game of the day. All right, today, we got a conversation coming up with Dan Shaughnessy about Chris Sale's situation, about the future of Dave Dombrowski, about whether or not the Red Sox are going to talk to other teams about Mookie Betts. Let's get to it. Dan Shaughnessy is a columnist for the Boston Globe, and he's been writing about the Red Sox for a lot of years. Dan, good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you, Buster.
All right, so the Red Sox sent out some news yesterday about Chris Sale after his meeting with Dr. James Andrews. And what they wrote in the release was that Andrews confirmed inflammation on the elbow. And I got to tell you, I laughed when I read that, because through the years I've had baseball executives sort of chortle and say, yeah, every time we tell you guys inflammation, we're not really telling you anything, because that's more of a symptom than actually telling you what the problem is. And my feeling is, I don't know about yours, I don't think teams and players are ever, you know, required to tell us exactly what's going on with them. But we're not required to believe what they tell us. And we use all the information we have to inform some speculation. And I know from talking with people around the sport last night, there are so many red flags up that he might have a partially torn elbow ligament. And it could turn out to be the same situation that we saw with Masahiro Tanaka, the Yankees, David Price, you know, early in his tenure with the Red Sox, where this is just something that Sale will either try to pitch through, pitch with, and if it doesn't work out, he could have Tommy John later. What would you read on it?
Well, I think you've got the proper amount of experience and cynicism on the entire take there, and I would go along with that. I think that, you know, again, people hear, oh, he went to see Andrews. Oh, no, Tommy John was announced. Oh, this is great. You know, it's not great. And, I mean, he's shut down for the rest of the year, at the very least. And as you say, it could just be delaying the surgery for another 6 weeks. We don't know. I mean, it could be, you know, Price came out of this with the magic elbow and never had the surgery, and there's a little bit of holding breath every time he takes the mound or acts funny after a pitch. But, yeah, they rolled the dice with him, and it's worked out really well. Whether you get two guys like that, I don't know. But overall, it's just been really – it's a discouraging time in the entire Chris Sale tenure here, because they had to shut him down in late July last year. I think he pitched 17 innings after July 27th. You know, he was very much held back in the spring this year. And he's won six games with a 4.4 ERA. Now he's shut down for the next 6 weeks. They just signed him to a $145 million contract, which starts next season. So, yeah, overall, it's not a great situation.
Yeah, and moving forward, for the next 3 years, they have $80 million committed annually to Chris Sale, David Price, and Nathan Eovaldi, which is going to shape a lot of the other decisions that they have. They have no idea what they're going to get out of these three veterans who are supposed to be the core of their rotation.
I think what you've just said has been understated around here. I think that's exactly right. It ties their hands with a lot of other, you know, things that are going to come up, and they don't know what they're getting out of those three pitchers. I mean, Sale was... You know, we think it was a reaction to the blow in the John Lester negotiations, and they jumped the gun. I don't believe they had to do that in the spring when they did. Eovaldi was rewarded for having that great six innings against the Dodgers, which was great. But, man, oh, man, I mean, he parlayed that into $68 million over 4 years. He's had an entirely lost season. He tried to start the other day, couldn't get an out in the third inning, and, you know, again, he throws 100. Everybody loves him. Nice guy. He works hard. But, I mean, they've made some decisions that could come back to bite him.
Yeah, and one of those dominoes that might be affected as we move forward might be Mookie Betts, and we'll get to that in a second. But when I was on vacation, I read a piece that you wrote about Dave Dombrowski and his future as head of baseball ops for the Red Sox. I wanted to get you on, and obviously, whether it's Dave or whoever replaces him, having to deal with this is going to be at the top of the list. You know, having to deal with Mookie Betts, having to deal with the rotation is going to be at the top of the list. Where does Dave stand based on the reporting that you've done?
Well, again, I'm a hardcore reporter like yourself there. My my piece was based more on instinct. It was presented as opinion. I'd be shocked to be still in the chair next year, is what I said. And I feel that he is isolated from a lot of the organization. I think increasingly from ownership, baseball ops, the clubhouse, the manager's office. I just feel it's Dave and Frank Wren and Tony La Russa to a degree, and they're kind of on an island there. And, you know, Dave did the job he was brought here to do. He won a World Series, you know, and he traded a lot of their farm system. Most of those have worked out pretty well. And he signed high-priced talent, veteran talent, and that's what he does. He also had bullpen issues the whole time, as he did in Detroit, and there's every indication that he's going to leave him a little bit high and dry here when it's over. I can't imagine him being extended, nor can I imagine him, you know, playing out his contract in effect and making these decisions as a lame duck guy going into next year. There's too much at stake, and don't forget, ownership always needs somebody to blame, and I think he'll take the bullets on the sale and Eovaldi things.
Yeah, and what's your sense of his relationship now with ownership? Because, you know, the one thing that I've wondered about is they've, you know, they made all these trades and strip mined the farm system to upgrade the team with deals for guys like Sale and Craig Kimbrel, and they spent all the money on the veteran players. None of that can happen unless ownership is signing on. So what's your sense of how they feel about where they stand with a weaker farm system and with this older, expensive core of players?
Well, what you say is absolutely true, but also ownership may have made these decisions and signed off on them, but they still want someone to blame. And I do think that Dave could be the guy when it comes to that. And Buster, you know, when I wrote that piece, generally if you go off, you know, half cocked and you know, you're way off base, there's a lot of pushback immediately where that report's not true, or you know, this guy's out of his mind. And there was none of that. It's been crickets from the Sox front office since that came out. And went back and looked when John talked the one time a year he talks in Florida, I think it was February 19th, where, you know, he went to great lengths to say that they were going to do something with Dave Dombrowski during the season. And nothing's been done. And I don't think it's acrimonious. I just think it's probably time.
I think two important questions as we move forward to that decision, what happens in the front office. What's your sense of the influence and slash the power of Sam Kennedy, who's the team president, and manager Alex Cora, who I feel like Alex may have more influence and power than any manager in baseball right now. He might be, you know, the 2019 version of the 2005 Mike Socia, so to speak.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I think that Alex, you know, he's untouchable right now, and he deserves that. And he was, you know, I mean, ownership takes great pride of authorship about Alex Cora, that, you know, we thought of this guy, you know, we identified him, and you know, he was a player here. We've always had our eye on him, and so we anointed this guy, and then he wins 119 games in his first year. So, yes, and he's involved at a lot of levels. I mean, he pulled off the White House thing, not going to the White House, and there was no pushback from up top, which generally your manager, there might be some of that. So he kind of gets his way on a lot of things, and I do think that he's in good graces with ownership, and I don't think there's any issues for him. But you're probably right when you say it would be a mistake to underrate his power.
All right, about Mookie Betts. I think it was John Paul Morosi was the first to report that there's, you know, some feeling in the industry that the Red Sox are going to market Mookie Betts this winter. And I do think whether it's Dave Dombrowski or somebody else who's running the baseball ops, that has to be the first question that they address during this course of this offseason. He's a free agent potentially in the fall of 2020. And it feels like that the Red Sox at some point are going to take a run at him early in the offseason and say, okay, what about an extension? And if it doesn't work out, then I do think it makes sense to market him. What do you think?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Red Sox have become like a latter-day NBA team, which is that the games they're playing now don't mean as much as the offseason, which is going to be the real season for them. Because, you know, in succession, you're going to have J.D. Martinez with a right to opt out. You're going to have the Dombrowski decision. Is he coming or going? And then, you know, Porcello's probably leaving as a free agent. And obviously, the Betts thing is paramount. You know, he's going into his last year. Do you take that risk? It doesn't seem to be any, again, no acrimony, but he doesn't sound like a guy who really wants to re-up and do what Bogarts did. He feels like a guy who wants to find out what's out there. And doesn't make him a bad guy. That's how it feels. Can the team afford to go into his year? It would be very disruptive and, you know, distractive and all that good stuff coming into spring training if he's going into the last year, given what he's done and what his value is in the big league. So, you know, teams that are interested in talking about him, you know the issues. I mean, you're talking, again, about 1 year of control, and what do you give up for that? But the Sox would sure be interested in hearing about that because the state of their farm system, which you know well.
And you use the word disruptive. You know, when you think about the Red Sox, it's a different market than, say, the Kansas City Royals. If they had, you know, a guy who's headed into free agency in a year, or the Orioles with Manny Machado, a recent example, you know, they essentially deferred the decision until the middle of the next season. I don't think you can do that if you're in Boston or, you know, you're with the Yankees and sort of carry that out into the year because, you know, they do have a lot of good players. They got Devers. They got Bogarts. They're going to be in the middle, at least in the fringes of the pennant race. And so if you're actually thinking about trading them, you better do it during the wintertime. What do you think?
It's tricky. They are built to win now. They have the highest payroll in baseball. They have, you know, a aging core of frontline pitching that's getting into their early 30s. Position players, or the bills come and due on those guys, guys who have performed well here. And you know, Devers and Bogarts are locked up, and Benintendi to a lesser degree. But, you know, they've got a really good core of young talent there. And what's going to happen with the rest of the people, and as the years go on, what are you going to look like in 2-3 years? And right now, it's not a great feeling. They are built to win now, and that never goes away here.
Now, one of the questions about Mookie, and certainly, you know, based on his production, you know, based on what you might expect from him in the next 3 or 4 years, he certainly is on sound ground to ask for a Mike Trout level type of salary. But one of the questions I have about him is, how much does he want to be the face of the franchise? You know, how much will he embrace that? He kind of reminds me a little bit, as we go to into these negotiations, he reminds me a little bit of Clayton Kershaw. And that my sense is that Mookie really doesn't care about money for money's sake. But I think Clayton, there's an awareness of, because of his stature among the players in the union, it's important for him to get proper value in his contract. But one thing that, if I'm the Red Sox, I'd want to meet with him and say, Mookie, do you want to be like Mike Trout as the Angels, doing all these events? Do you want to represent the franchise? Do you want to go out there and be that guy? Because I don't know if he necessarily does in a big market like Boston. We saw, you know, Bryce Harper got that huge contract from the Phillies, and by all accounts, he's put himself out there for just about everything the Phillies have asked him to do. I don't know if that's Mookie's personality.
No, we haven't seen him being that guy at any point ever here. He doesn't mean any harm by it. It's just not his
right.
Thing.
It's his prerogative.
He's a pleasant guy. And yeah, I know in the spring, at one point, David Price went to some lengths, which he often will do, just kind of go off on his own, and was griping about baseball not promoting Mookie enough. And you know, where's the national commercials for Mookie? And at which point, you know, baseball and the Red Sox and everyone said, yeah, we tried to do that. He doesn't want to do it. And then when Mookie was interviewed, I think at the All-Star game, he pretty much verified that, yeah, you know, that's okay. I really kind of just like the way things are and go from there. So, you know, it may be that's just not him. And I think that it gets forced on him by other people on the outside who really don't know him.
All right, Dan. Well, thanks for doing this. Great stuff on Dave Dombrowski. We'll be watching that as we go forward.
All right, take care, Buster.
Before we talk with Sarah Langs, we all know hiring is challenging. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy. And you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BUSTER. ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Numbers game.
Sarah Langs is a reporter and producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, we opened the show talking about how Troy Farkas wanted to pick the Rangers game as the game of the day. You know all the games that were played last night. Where would you rank the Rangers? Would you put it the game of the day? Come on.
I would not. I think it has to be the near no-hitter, Dakota Hudson.
It has to be.
Close there.
You're uninvited from the show, Sarah.
Unbelievable that you would do that. Troy, come on. Are you appalled like I am, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it went to extras, kind of exciting. But, yeah, I mean, it has to be. The only game between two contenders last night, I think, was the that Brewers-Cardinals game. So when I was getting ready for the night, figuring out, okay, what goes on the TV, what's streaming on the laptop, that had to be the game on the TV. And I feel like the game on the TV is usually what ends up being your game of the day. So.
Thank you very much. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three is 23.4. So we have one thing from Troy's game of the day. That was Albert Pujols' sprint speed on his stolen base late in that game last night. So 23.4 feet per second. 27 is the MLB average, and 30 is elite. So Pujols is not elite in this category. He has an average sprint speed of 22.6 feet per second this season. So he actually sped up in order to do this, even though the number doesn't quite sound like it. His 22.6 feet per second sprint speed this season is 512th of 513 players with at least 10 competitive runs this season. So the only guy slower than him is Brian McCann at 22.1 feet per second. And the thing that's pretty shocking to me, Pujols now has at least one stolen base in all 19 seasons of his career.
Number two
is 62. So that's how many runs the Nationals have scored in their last five games combined. And that includes a game, by the way, where they scored two runs. 62 is still a lot in a five-game span. It's the most in any five-game span in franchise history and the most by any team in a five-game span since the 2007 Yankees, who had two different spans with 63. They're the first National League team to score 13-plus in three straight games since the 1996 Rockies. And if they can reach that number again, 13, no National League team has had 13 or more runs in four straight games since at least 1908. So, I mean, they're really doing something. They're playing the Pirates right now. I feel like they could do it again tonight. We'll see.
Number one
is 40. So Pete Alonso now has 40 home runs this season, which is an NL rookie record, and one shy of tying the Mets franchise record, which is held by Carlos Beltran in 2006 and Todd Hundley in 1996. One thing he's really done with those home runs is hit them hard. He has 16 110-mile-an-hour home runs this season, which is tied with Gary Sanchez for the most in the majors. And how about this? He has 27 extra base hits with at least a 110-mile-an-hour exit velocity. Nobody else has more than 19. So he's got the home runs, but he's also doing it with the doubles.
Now, before you go, you're talking about the Nationals and their offense. Among the other National League teams, the question going into the playoffs is which team can actually challenge the Dodgers? As of today, because of that offense, because of the front of their rotation, I think the Nationals might be best suited. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've been saying that for a bit now, ever since they got off to that bad start and then they kind of figured it out. You know, they probably have one of the bigger question mark bullpens. Obviously, Sean Doolittle hurt right now and struggling leading up to that, but that offense is really good, and I don't know. I still feel like once he's back and healthy, I trust Doolittle maybe more than some of these other teams' closers. It's kind of the other innings that are my concern. But with that starting pitching and this offense, I mean, if you can win the first seven innings of the game, the way they're playing, they can probably win the whole game.
And all eyes will be on Max Scherzer if, in fact, he comes back to the Nationals rotation later in the week. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Welcome to the show.
Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
Yeah, Dave, and I gotta tell you, your name came up in our household yesterday. The show came up in our household yesterday.
Wow, I'm curious, how did it come up?
Yeah, so I make my way back from Williamsport yesterday. I walk in the door and my phone rings, and it's from my son who's at camp. And, of course, you know, a call from your son in the middle of the day when he's out of the house. You're concerned. Did something happen? Did he break his leg? Did he break his arm? Did something happen? No, he was upset with the power rankings.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Yeah, he's a huge fan of the Atlanta Braves. And last week, according to my son, I haven't gone back and double checked this, but I know he's an ardent fan and he's an ardent reader of your work. The Braves are number 7 last week. And then last week they took 2 or 3 from the Mets, then 2 or 3 from the Dodgers, and then they dipped to number 8. And because your name was on the write up, he was like, yeah, Dave Schoenfield wrote this piece about the Braves being number 8. And his word was terrible.
That's my word. I love using that. My wife makes fun of me for using the word terrible. So maybe your son and I are brothers in arms here. I only write the comments for the Braves every week. I'm only one of the voters. I mean, Kirk Gin, let's get on his case. He's a voter. Yeah, boy. Yeah, Braves. I don't know about you. I always find the Braves, they're hard to rank because they're not having a dominant season, but they're going to make the playoffs. They're probably going to win that division, although the Nationals are making it a race. But they have some flaws, although the bullpen was, you know, better this weekend. But yeah, the Braves could be a top 3 team, 4 team. They could be 7th or 8th. So I guess they're not getting a lot of respect from our voters.
Man, do you agree with him? When he was like, where's the logic in that? They dropped a spot after beating the Mets and the Dodgers?
Yeah, I'm trying to think where I put them. You know, clearly, you know, I have, you know, Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, 1, 2, and 3. I think I put the Braves 4th this week, maybe 5th. I might have had the Twins, the Indians or the Twins 4th. But, yeah, I'd say 4th or 5th.
I guarantee you he's going to listen to this part of the podcast on his lunch break today. And he'll probably be satisfied with your explanation and get a little smile on his face. All right.
Okay.
You have a piece on ESPN.com today, which is getting a lot of traction on the interweb. You write about the top home run achievement for each team among the choices that you made. Which were the toughest ones?
Well, yeah, so this could be anything, right? Most in a season, best streak, whatever. Anything related to home runs. Individual, not team. Clearly the Yankees, because you could pick anything from the Yankees. Babe Ruth, 2 3-run homer games in the World Series. You got Maris with 61. Lou Gehrig with a 4-homer game. Mickey Mantle with an unbreakable record, in my book, 18 home runs in his World Series career. Good luck beating that one. Aaron Judge with the rookie record. I went with Don Mattingly, and I kind of cheated because it's 2 records, but in the same season, he hit 8 home runs over 8 consecutive games, and then he also tied the record, or set the record since tied, with 6 grand slams in one season. So I went with Mattingly with 2 records in one season. So that was clearly my toughest call.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson. That was a name that I saw was popping up on my Twitter after I retweeted your piece this morning. Reggie Jackson, his name was popping up all over my my timeline. You know, and I, of course, am very sensitive about that, having grown up a Dodger fan and having been absolutely obliterated by Reggie Jackson as a 13 or 14-year-old in the 77 and 78 World Series. That was probably a tough one to not use.
Yeah. When Reggie, especially his, you know, game 5 when he had 3 swings and hit 3 home runs, you know, but 9 other players have hit 3 home runs in a playoff game. Yankees, tough call. Look, there's a lot of tough calls. Cardinals, do you go Mark McGwire with 70 in one season? No, I went with one of my favorite home run stats of all time, Fernando Tatis, only player ever with 2 grand slams in one inning. So I wanted to mix it up, have some fun. There's some unique accomplishments out there across the sport.
I don't know how deeply you've dived into your mentions, but what's some of the pushback that you're getting from some of the readers?
I haven't looked yet. I was up late last night, so I'll go check Twitter as soon as we're done here. Oh, look, the thing I love about this is there's no right answer, right?
Exactly.
It's what your personal preference is. And I did say I tried to avoid all the 4 home runs in one game. There's 18 guys who've done that. I don't want it to just be a list of 4 homer games. I picked a couple of those. So, yeah, it's personal preference. So I think it's just a fun thing for readers to dig into.
Yeah, 100%. And I love pieces like that. I always refer to them as the pieces that you talk about at the bar, right?
Where exactly.
You're just,
yeah.
You're just sitting over a beer. You're just saying, okay, which of these ones would you take? Those are fun pieces. Speaking of the Braves, Billy Hamilton claimed on waivers by the Braves from the Kansas City Royals. I don't have any hard information that this is one of those arranged waiver claims that we were talking about on the podcast last week. I wrote about it over the weekend. It's become a thing this year, I think, just based on conversations I've had with executives, where one team, because we now have the hardened July 31st trade deadline, one team will be in contact with another team and say, hey, you know that player that you were kind of talking about before the trade deadline, you still thinking about moving him? And the other team will say, well, yeah, and if we put him on the waiver wire, do you think you might claim him? Now, you know, what's very different, of course, is that you can't pull a player back from waivers, which you could do in the past, and right. You can't actually trade player for player. But for a second division team like the Royals, a struggling team like the Royals, you know, Billy Hamilton has demonstrated at this point he can't be an effective major league hitter. And they're building for the future. There's no point in giving your at-bats in that position to Billy Hamilton, who you're probably not going to keep around next year on a contract option anyway. If you just let him go on waivers to the Braves, you save a little bit of money. We've seen three or four examples of these. And for the Braves, what a great pickup. I love this. I mean, they just lost Ender Inciarte, who's going to be out for a long time. From what I understand, the way the Braves are going to use him is off the bench, not surprisingly. Ronald Acuna Jr. will start games in center field. Matt Joyce will be in one corner for the games against right-handed pitchers. And then later in the game, he could sign Acuna Jr. To left field. You put Billy Hamilton, who's an impact defender in center field. And I can't wait for him to be on a contending team in October. You know, yeah. The guy who's going to come off the bench for the Braves in a 2-2 game after Brian McCann draws a leadoff walk in the top of the seventh inning. You put that guy in a game, he could have an impact.
Yeah, no, well, remember, was it 2015? Terrence Gore was on the Royals playoff roster and had several key steals throughout that postseason. You know, most teams don't carry that kind of guy anymore because they got to carry 8 or 9 relievers even in the playoffs. So, yeah, love this pickup. Not only in Cerati, but Markakis is still on the IL, Austin Riley on the IL. The Braves are kind of scrambling a little bit in the outfield. So I'll be curious. I wonder if he'll end up getting a little more playing time than we might even expect. You know, Matt Joyce, he's hit well this year, but in a limited duty, mostly as a pinch hitter. We all know Hamilton, plus defenders, never won a gold glove, probably deserved to win one or two. I'm with you. Great pickup for the Braves.
I like him off the bench. Like, I want to see him in close games where you wait for that spot in a close game to put him in as a pinch runner, and, you know, and then you put him in center field for the rest of the game. That's how I would use him.
Yeah, no doubt in the playoffs. I was more alluding to the regular season, but yeah, in the playoffs, especially assuming if Inciarte's back and Markakis is back, yeah, he's not going to start, but good bench weapon for the postseason, no doubt about it.
By the way, I mentioned the arranged waiver claims thing that are going on. I have no problem with that. Like, I think that's totally fine, and I hope baseball doesn't try to legislate against it. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, you know, I think we're finding teams without the, you know, the additional trade deadline, and we were concerned or we were aware that these issues could pop up where you suddenly have a rash of injuries. You know, and how do you fill that spot if you don't have somebody down in AAA? So, I don't have a problem with it.
All right. I was talking with Dan Shaughnessy about Mookie Betts and the impending decision the Red Sox will have coming up in the offseason. You know, we presume they probably early in the offseason will try to sign him to some sort of a long-term deal. There's a lot of industry speculation that if they aren't able to do that, then they could turn around and market him during the course of the wintertime and try to backfill some of their lack of depth in their farm system. And I mentioned to Dan that part of my conversation with Mookie would be about whether or not he wants to be the guy. Because he potentially could merit a really big contract. But to me, if you're going to do that, then you want someone who's going to be okay making a ton of appearances. A guy who's going to be fine, you know, being the face of the franchise. And look, Mookie is a great guy, and it's totally his prerogative whether or not he wants to do this. But I don't know if he necessarily does. And if I were the Red Sox and I were talking with him about a long-term deal, like a Trout deal, maybe a little bit north of Bryce Harper, I would show him, say, look, Mike Trout does a ton of stuff for the Angels. Bryce Harper, since signing with the Phillies, has done a ton of stuff. Mookie, do you want that? Is that something you want? Because if the answer is I don't know or no, I don't know if I'd want to spend that kind of money on him. What about you?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I get the feeling that Mookie maybe is a little torn on this year. I remember being there at the start of spring training, and he was talking about meeting Michael Jordan in the offseason. And he and Mookie's very aware, as one of the African-American faces of the game, that there's part of him that wants to get his brand out there and how important that is. But I don't think that's in his nature, obviously, to be this big vocal leader and the face of the franchise. So I'm just speculating here. I think there's that internal struggle with Mookie on how much he wants to put himself out there, because he just wants to play baseball, do his job, do his work. But he knows he's an important figure in the game. So, yeah, it's a fascinating issue. And, I have no idea what will happen this offseason.
No, and I think you'll also probably echo me on this and agree with me on this point. This is not a criticism of Mookie Betts. Like, I don't mean this at all as a criticism of him. It's totally his prerogative as to what he wants to do. And it's actually a really great part of his personality that he doesn't, it's not something he, wants to be the guy.
Right.
Where he, wants to put himself out there. I think that's just his nature as a good person, as a good teammate, where he's not reflexively sort of shoving other people aside so he can be the guy. But if you're going to get that type of contract, there are going to be a lot of situations where you need to be the guy.
No, absolutely. And, from the front office's perspective, they're facing a current pitching staff with some injury issues. They're facing a bad farm system in a season where they might not make the playoffs. The payroll is still going to be huge, even though they'll gain some flexibility in the upcoming years, losing Pablo Sandoval and some bad Ruzne Castillo, some bad contract like that. I think there's no doubt it's going to be maybe the biggest story of the offseason. Where does Mookie Betts land if he lands somewhere else?
And my advice to Mookie would be call David Ortiz. There's no doubt David Ortiz was the guy in the Red Sox organization. After the Boston Marathon bombing, he was the guy who made the speech, and everybody knew he would be the guy.
Yep.
That's sort of how he evolved on that team. And David probably would give him some perspective on that. Give me 30 seconds on this. Carlos Correa comes out of the Astros game last night. AJ Hinch, their manager, told reporters afterward he just could not get his back loose. This situation makes me cringe a little bit, knowing how Carlos was affected by his back injury last year.
Yeah, that's my thought. I saw that happen, and your immediate reaction is just you're sad because you don't want this to be a serious issue with what happened last year. So let's just hope it's a one-time thing. They'll probably rest him for a couple days. But, the Astros need Carlos Correa back on the field, and we all want Carlos Correa back on the field.
Dave, thanks for doing this. I'm sure my son will be very relieved to hear your explanation.
All right. I'll be curious to hear what he says.
Before we get to the Bleacher Tweets, I want to tell you that the new season of 30 for 30 podcast is out today, Tuesday, August 20th. A five-part series on former Clippers owner Donald Sterling, who was ousted by the NBA after being caught on tape making racist and sexist remarks. The series, which explores Sterling's career and how this incident changed the NBA forever, is hosted and reported by ESPN's Ramona Shelburne. That's The Sterling Affairs from 30 for 30 Podcasts and The Undefeated. Find it wherever you get your podcast or at 30for30podcast.com/Sterling.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, you have some Bleacher Tweets for you here this morning. Unfortunately, none of them will be about our Game of the Day squabble, but maybe tomorrow. First one comes from Reggie Deal at BaseballNerd07. Buster, I was listening to Reds Radio on Sunday, and they were talking about how the NL has no lockdown bullpens. Is this because too many bullpens rely on guys with lesser talent than the starting staff?
Reggie, generally speaking, yes. I think you hit it right on the head. It's funny because 20 years ago, we saw teams try to wear down the starting pitchers to get to the underbelly of the bullpen. That would be the seventh, eighth, ninth guy on the staff. And now teams are working to get those guys into the game. In other words, they want to bring in those relievers. And here's the problem. a lot of the relievers being called up from the minor leagues are essentially one-trick ponies. They throw really hard. They bring a lot of velocity. But as we've talked about in the podcast, this year, hitters are turning around velocity like they never have before.
On a related note, Ian KV at Vornstars asks, has the overall winning percentage for teams leading after seven innings fallen this season? It seems that walk-offs have risen as of late.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And look, I haven't looked into the actual numbers, but we did have a stat that we talked about in our production meeting on Sunday morning. The save percentage, I think Hembo sent this in, 64% for baseball going into the last weekend. That's the second worst in baseball history. I think that number's right. We'll get some more on that from Hembo in the podcast tomorrow.
Next one comes from Rusty Shackelford at Shackelford03. Do you think there's any chance that MLB expands rosters to 28 players but only allows 25 active each game, similar to what the other three major sports do? As it is, three starters are unavailable every day, and it could stop position players from pitching.
Yeah, Rusty, I hope that's the case. I hope that whenever the union and Major League Baseball make their deal, that they change the rules regarding September, because I'm already cringing about the idea of September games where we're seeing 18 to 20 pitchers used in some of these games. And the way the trend is happening, that's what we're going to see.
Talked about this a little bit with Sarah. Next one comes from Eric Johnson at ETJohnson1. Buster, when are the Nationals going to start getting some respect? After surviving critical injuries the first 2 months, which led to a 19-31 record, they have been the best team in the NL since May 24th.
Yeah, Eric, I feel like we've been talking up the Nationals a little bit. You back me up on that, Troy? Like we've been
aware.
Yeah,
definitely made some dangerous. Definitely made some appearances in the Power 10. You were really talking them up in July.
Yeah, exactly.
Final one this morning comes from T. Jones at TNJ629. Simply wants to know, will Joe Girardi ever manage again?
T. Jones, yes, he will at some point. And you do wonder if, like Buck Showalter, he'll think back on his previous tenures and think about, hey, you know, what are some adjustments to be made? Because I think what, you know, the perception of his work coming out of the Yankees was is that he didn't connect with players especially well. And that's something that he can certainly work on. Joe's a smart guy. He's a great baseball guy. He's a terrific person. I'm sure he'll get another shot.
Could potentially be with the Cubs next year. Who knows? Thank you for the tweets this morning. Use the hashtag BleacherTweets when you bring them on Twitter.
That's it for today. Great podcast. Dan Shaughnessy, Dave Schoenfield, Sarah Langs, and, of course, Troy Farkas. You're forgiven today, but don't ever put the Rangers in the game of the day again.
We'll see.
Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.